Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 19, 2021 program. Losing health and home, Oregon's pending COVID-19 eviction crisis. This is the 21st program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club president. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors, Kaiser Permanente, University of Oregon, Peace Health, and Lane Community College, as well as generous support from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. This City Club program is the third and final program in a three-part series on local housing issues. In today's program, presenters will focus on Oregon's pending COVID-19 eviction crisis. We will be joined by Julie Fahey, Oregon House District 14 representative, Jason Miller, Legislative Director of the Oregon Rental Housing Association, and Allison McIntosh, Policy and Communications Director at Neighborhood Partnerships in Portland. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Skip Coburn and Karin Knudsen for coordinating today's program. About the program, eviction has been described as, quote, the nuclear option, end quote, to address disputes between tenants and landlords, and the most common cause of eviction is the non-payment of rent. Evictions initiate a cycle of housing instability for the renter, especially in markets like Eugene with little available housing, and they are time-consuming, stressful, and expensive for the landlord. Even before 2020, many local residents were living one step away from eviction because housing costs have risen significantly faster than wages. In Lane County, one in three renters pays more than 50% of their income for housing. Enter the COVID-19 pandemic and the inability of many workers to go out to work. Today's program introduces the unprecedented series of judicial, executive, and legislative actions that Oregon took in 2020 to mitigate the potential eviction disaster created by COVID-19. This includes House Bill 4401, a bill that provides assistance for renters and landlords and extends the moratorium on COVID-related evictions. Our format today includes a question and answer period with City Club members via Zoom.
Hello, thank you so much to City Club for having us on today to talk about this incredibly important issue. I'm Julie Fahey, the state representative for House District 14, which includes West Eugene and Junction City. And I'm the chair of the Housing Committee in the Oregon House of Representatives. Housing stability is at the root of so many issues that Oregonians are facing right now. We were experiencing a full-on housing crisis even before the pandemic began. We need to build more than 100,000 housing units just to meet the current demand for housing in this state. And statewide, even before the pandemic, about half of renter households are considered housing cost burdened, which means that their rent is more than 30% of their income. And nearly a quarter are severely housing cost burdened. And it's not just renters, it's homeowners too. About a quarter of homeowners are cost burdened in Oregon. And this isn't just a Portland or a Eugene issue. It's a problem all over the state, in urban and in rural areas. And then the COVID-19 pandemic hit. And practically overnight, hundreds of thousands of Oregonians lost their jobs. And we know in the pandemic and in the associated recession, they are disproportionately impacting low-income workers and people of color and making existing income inequality even worse. And these are the Oregonians who were already struggling with their housing costs. A majority of Black and Latinx Oregonians rent their homes due in part to historical discrimination in housing policies. And over half of Oregonians who owe back rent right now are in BIPOC communities. I'm here today to talk about the policies that Oregon has put in place to prevent evictions during the time of COVID. We know that being evicted can have a serious and long-term effects on a family, on their economic well-being, the educational outcomes of their kiddos, on personal safety, and on physical and mental health. And that kind of damage is incredibly difficult to address once it's been done. Not to mention the fact that Oregon has an existing shelter crisis and we're short at least 10,000 shelter beds statewide. Moreover, we also have clear evidence that evictions increase the spread of COVID-19 as families lose access to a safe place to stay healthy and minimize their exposure to others. We looked at a study late last year that found that lifting eviction moratoriums in other states led to an increase of more than 400,000 COVID-19 cases in the US and more than 10,000 deaths between March and September. So in addition to all of the other reasons why it was critical for us to keep people housed during the pandemic, preventing evictions is a key public health measure as well. So what did we do about this? So last year, the governor and the legislature took action to keep people stably housed. Early on in the pandemic, Governor Brown signed Executive Order 2013, which placed a temporary statewide moratorium on evictions. And a few months later, the legislature extended and codified that moratorium during our June special session. These restrictions on evictions were accompanied by over $60 million in rental assistance. And then in December, the legislature took action again, instituting a revised version of the moratorium through June 30th of this year. And we picked that date because, in part, so that families with kids would have certainty throughout the school year. We wanted to make sure that kids who had already had their schooling massively disrupted by the pandemic weren't at additional risk of losing their home and their internet connection during the school year. So under the new moratorium, the moratorium that's in place right now, tenants have to submit a sworn statement to their landlord that they've experienced financial hardship during the pandemic. That hardship can be a loss of work or wages, increased medical or childcare expenses, or any other circumstances that have reduced income or increased expenses. That declaration form is available online in many different places, including at the Oregon Law Center website. If a landlord intends to move forward with an eviction notice, they must provide their tenant with the statement form and inform them of their rights. So during the moratorium, no cause evictions are also not allowed unless a landlord meets several criteria, including selling the home to someone who will occupy it, demolishing or converting the unit, or moving themselves or a family member into the unit. I also think it's important to note that there is also an eviction moratorium in place at the federal level right now that is currently set to expire at the end of March. But the federal moratorium doesn't contain as many protections for tenants, and there are many more conditions that need to be met for tenants to qualify. So we really felt that additional protections were needed at the state level. These actions and the eviction moratorium were necessary short-term measures to protect lives and prevent harm to tenants. But a moratorium alone isn't sustainable for either tenants or landlords, and it doesn't actually solve the fundamental problem of tenants being unable to afford rent during this time, or the fact that some landlords are also experiencing significant financial hardship. We know that some landlords have lost the rental income that they rely on and may themselves be struggling to afford mortgages or other needs. So it was really important to me when the legislature took action that to extend the moratorium, that came with a significant amount of funding that would help both tenants and landlords. As I mentioned earlier, the legislature allocated $60 million in rent assistance last summer. But as the pandemic wore on, longer than any of us expected, it became very, very clear that that was not enough to meet the need. So in December, the legislature also allocated an additional $200 million in rent assistance. $50 million of that is going to be distributed through the pre-existing tenant-based assistance programs, and $150 million of which is being distributed through a new landlord-based program. So starting this week, landlords can apply online through Oregon Housing and Community Services website on behalf of all of their tenants who owe rent payments. Smaller landlords and landlords with a higher percentage of unpaid rent will be prioritized to receive assistance first. The program will help with unpaid back rent only, and landlords will be required to forgive 20% of the past due rent. Our hope is that this landlord-based program will be more efficient than a tenant-based program because we can get the assistance out the door for multiple tenants at once. So if a landlord has 10 tenants that are behind on rent, instead of 10 separate applications for each tenant, there will be one application to serve them all. We also hope that that will reduce the burden on tenants, many of whom are struggling right now and are already stressed trying to navigate the unemployment system and other social safety nets. The landlord program is voluntary, and we think the new program will work in concert with the existing tenant-based rent assistance. If tenants choose not to apply, or if a landlord chooses not to apply for the landlord-based funding, tenants can still apply for tenant-based rent assistance. So in Lane County, tenants can visit lanecounty.org/rent to find out more information on rent assistance. And landlords statewide can just Google Oregon Landlord Compensation Fund, which should take you to the OHCS website where you can apply. The actions we've taken at the state level will not solve all of the problems that tenants and landlords in Oregon are facing. But what they have done is to stabilize an unsustainable situation and to protect thousands of families from eviction. The COVID-19 pandemic is the biggest public health crisis of our time. And the eviction moratorium and the funding we allocated to help pay rent has kept people housed at a time when they need this protection the most. And I just want to close by saying, my opening remarks by saying, you know, how much work has gone into keeping people housed during the pandemic, and not just at the legislative level. Our state agency, Oregon Housing and Community Services, cities and counties, you know, the service providers on the ground who are working with tenants and getting rent assistance out the door. It's really been a team community effort to do this. And all of our systems are sort of stretched to the max right now to get this very important work done. And that's really just so that we don't lose any ground from where we already were with the housing crisis a year ago. So while I personally and many others have been focused on keeping people housed during the pandemic, I know that we still have so much more work to do to address Oregon's housing crisis, to build more housing units, and to make sure that housing is affordable for Oregonians. So with that, I am going to pass it off to Jason Miller, who is the legislative director of the Oregon Rental Housing Association.
Thank you, Representative Fahey, and thank you, City Club of Eugene, for inviting me today. My name is Jason Miller. I am the legislative director for the Oregon Rental Housing Association. I have over 10 years of property management experience, and I manage the day-to-day business of Diversified Property Management, a mid-sized property management company in the Willamette Valley. Early in 2020, we all heard about the coronavirus, COVID-19. In late February, Oregon had its first confirmed case of COVID-19. By early March, the governor declared a state of emergency, and the disease was progressing quickly, and we were in the middle of a global health crisis. Many people were self-quarantining and becoming sick. Due to lost wages, some weren't able to pay their bills. Some housing providers quickly reacted and offered relief in the form of no late fees, extended due dates, or reduced rents to their tenants in need. When the lockdown happened in late March, it was clear non-payment of rent and possible evictions for non-payment was going to be a larger issue. Executive orders were enacted by our governor to protect tenants from eviction. I think most agree that this was the right thing to do. The issue was there's no protection for housing providers. Housing providers still had the obligation to pay mortgages, taxes, insurance, utilities, and maintenance with little or no income coming in. And tenants were not required to prove that they were in need or even communicate with the housing provider. House Bill 4213 gave some hope to housing providers. It gave an end date of September 30th, 2020 to the moratorium and a required payback period for residents that were past due in rent. It also required that tenants communicate with the housing providers to arrange for payments. However, another executive order was issued. It extended the moratorium to the end of 2020 with no additional housing provider protections. Housing providers and tenants were often confused as HB 4213 and the latest executive order were not completely in sync, and both conflicted with some very city, county, and federal moratoriums. By this point, some housing providers have had to sell their rental homes because they could no longer afford to house their tenants. The majority of these rental homes that were sold were becoming owner-occupied and reducing the rental inventory in Oregon. Others, after depleting their savings, are having to take second mortgages on their personal homes, or even come out of retirement and start working again just to keep their tenants housed. Multifamily property owners are wondering how long they can hold on before their businesses fail. The latest incarnation of the moratorium, House Bill 4401, extends the moratorium to June 30th, 2021 for the tenants to sign the declaration of need. This bill starts to address the issues facing the housing providers by offering landlord-based compensation fund. The housing provider must file on behalf of the tenant, and they will receive funds of 80% of the past due rent while forgiving another 20%. There are limited funds, so there's no guarantee, but the applications are scored to smaller housing providers, and those with more tenant debt are given priority. A financial advisory firm, Stout, estimated in September of 2020 an outstanding rent debt of $378 million in Oregon. That's about $54 million per month of the moratorium. If my math is correct, the number should be somewhere around $594 million today. House Bill 4401 provides a total of $200 million in landlord and tenant-based assistance. Even combined with other existing programs and money coming from the federal programs, we have a shortfall of money to cover the situation. If we do not have a solution for the unpaid rent coming due in July, many tenants will face eviction, not because housing providers want people to be homeless, but because they cannot operate at a loss any longer. One solution gaining bipartisan effort is Senate Bill 330. Senate Bill 330 establishes a tax credit to housing providers in exchange for forgiveness of tenant debt from the moratorium period. This solution provides assistance for housing providers and tenants alike, providing a fresh start at the end of the moratorium. I'd like to thank the City Club of Eugene for having me today. And now I'll turn it over to Allison McIntosh with the Oregon Housing Alliance.
Thank you so much, Jason and Representative Fahey. And thank you to the Eugene City Club for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be with you all virtually. My name is Allison McIntosh, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance. As you all know, COVID-19 continues to negatively impact our communities, particularly for folks with low incomes who may continue to be out of work or who have lost income due to the virus. Thousands of Oregon households who rent their home would be at risk of eviction without our current eviction moratorium in place. And today I want to share with you all what people who rent their homes are experiencing and what solutions we have to offer. The Oregon Housing Alliance is a coalition of more than 90 organizations from all parts of the state, including affordable housing developers, residents of affordable housing, local jurisdictions, and organizations working to meet basic needs in every corner of our state. And we believe that a safe and stable place to call home is a basic human need. I want to be clear that I think that Oregon is doing a pretty amazing job, especially compared to many states, in the way that we're responding to the pandemic. Folks are protected by an eviction moratorium, as you've heard, through June 30th, and there is about to be a significant amount of rent assistance available in communities. Together, the moratorium paired with rent assistance are really critical and important interventions. And while some of the data that I'm going to share with you is dire, we know that the problems that our communities are facing are solvable. And I believe that we can continue to protect people's health and housing stability. Right now, we're also looking ahead to July 1st, when the current eviction moratorium ends, to try to make sure that folks are helped with rent assistance before that time so that they don't have to grapple with mounting debt and housing instability on July 1st. The pandemic has lifted up countless stories of people who are making extreme sacrifices to pay rent and remain in their homes. I want to highlight some of those stories through some of the most recent data collected as part of the Census Household Pulse Survey. And this data is about Oregonians who were surveyed over the last several weeks. More than 4 in 10 households, 44%, reported being worried about being evicted within the next 2 months. 21% of homeowners who responded reported being worried about being foreclosed upon during the next 2 months. 44% of respondents reported using credit cards to meet their basic needs. 25% reported borrowing money from family or friends, and 29% reported selling belongings or spending down savings to meet their basic needs. And right now in Oregon, about somewhere around 10 to 15% of renters who respond report that they aren't currently caught up on rent. We also have heard stories in the news media that have shared incredibly difficult stories of people selling cars or furniture, skipping meals, and making other sacrifices in order to pay the rent. And that's really not uncommon. I want to pause and let that sink in, because I think that this data might shock you and worry you. It certainly shocks and worries me. And I have been looking at this data since it first started being collected earlier in the pandemic. While most folks are paying rent payments, again, about between 10 and 15% of renters are not caught up, folks are making really extreme sacrifices in order to stay in their home or get caught up. Because of a global pandemic over which none of us had any control, folks are being put into situations where they're spending down their savings, selling their assets, skipping meals, all in order to pay whatever portion of their rent or mortgage they can. And as Rep. Fahey mentioned, families of color have been particularly hard hit by COVID. Both the impacts of job loss and the virus, due to systemic racism, which has kept many in low-wage jobs, or the legacy of environmental health impacts, which negatively impact people's health. Recent research by Portland State University reflects that people of color are more likely to owe back rent. I want to turn to some national data about how much back rent is owed, and I think Jason mentioned some of this. There is some national recent data from Moody's that suggests that renters who owe back rent owe about an average of $5,400, an amount that could be solved through rent assistance, but for someone who may have lost their job, that amount might feel insurmountable. We also have the data from Stout, which was mentioned earlier, another national firm that has been doing really amazing research. They had been updating the data every 2 weeks and unfortunately stopped at the end of November. At the end of November, at that time, they were estimating that the shortfall for Oregon renters was between $126 million and $222 million. So really close actually to the amount that the legislature committed in December of 2020. We also now have additional federal money coming to Oregon soon and are hoping always for more to get help for folks to get them caught up on any rent losses that they've experienced as we all move forward towards a hopeful light at the end of this tunnel. Some of you may have also seen the recent PSU study, which showed that Oregonians currently owe about $378 million in back rent. And that unless we figure out how to get rent assistance that is into the hands of people who need it, the cost of the evictions that could stem from that back rent could reach into the billions of dollars. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because eviction is not just one family losing their home and finding another. Some of you may remember the book Evicted, which shows us that evictions have incredible negative ripple effects into people's lives and their communities. And if you haven't read it, I would encourage you to. Evictions mean that kids miss school, and particularly now when districts are remote, how do kids go to school from a car or a tent or a shelter? Evictions might mean that parents lose work because it's that much harder to keep a job when you don't have a place to sleep or shower. Evictions impact not just one family, but everything around them. Teachers know that there are negative impacts to other kids in the classroom. Doctors and nurses know that there are negative impacts to our health. And employers can share negative impacts on their workers and consequently their companies. These ripple effects impact our communities, and we have to do all we can to prevent it from happening. As Representative Fahey also mentioned, there is recent research by public health experts that shows how evictions can and do negatively impact COVID cases. The threat of eviction can increase stress, anxiety, and depression, weakening people's immune systems. And as families get into a situation where they've exhausted all of their assets in order to avoid eviction, they may in turn move in with family or friends and create an overcrowded housing situation where COVID could spread. In addition, shelters or other situations that folks experiencing homelessness find themselves in may put them at greater risk of spreading or contracting COVID. And again, unfortunately, evictions continue to disproportionately impact communities of color who rent in higher percentages than their white counterparts due to historic housing discrimination and housing policies. We really want to make sure that we're protecting folks, and an eviction moratorium has positive implications. Families will have a roof over their head, kids will be able to do homework at home. And other states that have previously decided to lift their eviction moratoriums or are choosing not to enforce the federal CDC order are seeing unfortunate, predictable, and preventable results. Oregon has made a different choice. And I really want to thank Representative Fahey for her incredible leadership on this issue. We would not be talking about how Oregon is succeeding at preventing evictions without her work on this issue. We were really thrilled to see a commitment from the legislature of $200 million in rent assistance and then additional federal dollars, which will offer significant relief both to tenants and landlords who have been impacted by this global pandemic. We all know that in spite of the eviction moratorium, people still owe this rent and these bills still come due, and we need to help folks get caught up by providing rent assistance. In closing, I would just reiterate that households are making really tough choices to continue paying rent, and that we don't believe folks should be evicted because of a pandemic, and we need to continue to both prevent evictions as well as provide rent assistance. And I will say, I wouldn't be doing a very good job at being an advocate if I didn't encourage you all to call your decision makers, to call your federal congresspeople and ask them to invest more in rent assistance, in housing solutions and housing opportunity, to call your state legislators and ask them to reinstate our foreclosure moratorium, which was allowed to expire on December 31st, and to call your local decision makers and ask them to commit local funds to solve these problems. And lastly, to encourage you to support affordable housing that's being built in our neighborhoods, because we simply need more safe, stable, and affordable places for folks with low incomes to call home in our communities. Thank you so much for having me here today, and I'm looking forward to our discussion.
I'm Skip Coburn, coordinator of today's forum and a member of the City Club Program Committee. Again, we're joined by Representative Julie Fahey and Jason Miller from the legislative, from the Oregon Rental Housing Association, and Allison McIntosh from Neighborhood Partnerships. So now we're going to take questions from members. The first question will come from Tim Morris, though, who is president of the Springfield Eugene Tenant Association. So Tim, go ahead and ask your question. You can identify whether you are asking the question of one particular person or if you want everybody to respond.
Thank you, Skip, and thank you so much for inviting me. As Skip mentioned, my name is Tim Morris, board president of the Springfield Eugene Tenant Association. We are a local 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to supporting tenants by assisting, educating, and empowering renters here in the Springfield Eugene area. We provide a free hotline that educates tenants regarding their rights and protections and connecting them with local resources. And the data that we're collecting with this direct connection with tenants is an invaluable tool in gleaning information on what tenants are facing every day, which is particularly important during this global pandemic and economic crisis that we're in. So not only is this pandemic an economic issue extremely distressing, but an extremely disturbing trend is emerging. Based on our last hotline report, over 25% of our calls in the month of January alone are related to no-cause and for-cause evictions. Mm-hmm. As you know, no-cause evictions are by and large illegal unless there is a significant landlord reason. And yet the amount of no-cause evictions that we see as CETA continues to rise. After reviewing many of these calls personally myself, the picture is becoming clear that some landlords in our community are taking advantage of tenants who are unaware of these new laws that have changed once again during these distressing times. My question is this, and my question is for everyone. What efforts will be taken to crack down on fraudulent and illegal eviction notices during and following the eviction moratorium?
I'll take this first and then let others jump in. Really appreciate the question, Tim, and all the work that CETA is doing right now. I think as Tim knows and some of the others on this call, one of the things when we were crafting the legislation that passed in December that included the extended moratorium and the additional financial assistance, one of the big concerns of mine, particularly with the requirement of having a financial declaration, was how are we going to make sure that tenants understand their rights under this new law and understand what protections are in place for them? And that's both tenants and landlords. We needed to get the word out to sort of everyone as to what protections were in place and how to follow the law. So that the work that the legislature did came with outreach funding to do communications work to tenants and landlords and some on the ground outreach to tenants to make sure they were aware of their rights. So that's sort of the first layer of, you know, how can we, what protections are in place and how can we make sure that the law is being adhered to? I think we are hearing we are definitely hearing sort of increased reports of tenants that are still being evicted regardless of the moratorium. And it's definitely something that is concerning and that the legislature is talking about. From a broader perspective, in my mind, the biggest, highest need thing that we needed to do in December was to extend the moratorium and set up these new financial assistance programs that can get money out the door and get tenants caught up on rent. That has given us the space. You know, the moratorium now is going through the end of June. And so it's given us the space to address and deal with some of the other issues that we're focused on right now, like what's going to happen when the moratorium is over and how can we support tenants in the meantime. So it's definitely something we're talking about. I don't know if Allison or Jason, you have additional things to add there.
Thank you, Representative Fahey. I'd like just to say the Oregon Rental Housing Association, one of our key missions is educating housing providers on the laws in ORS 90, which is Oregon Landlord-Tenant Law, and also any new legislation that may come down through the pipeline. We are currently teaching classes on House Bill 4401 and what types of evictions are allowed and what types of evictions are not allowed. Certainly, we've seen a little bit of the increase in the for-cause evictions. Part of that is due just from the pandemic in general, people staying at home, people being hyperly stressed and maybe not acting correctly, or getting into arguments with their neighbors. I know housing providers always try to work with tenants, and the last result is an eviction. Nobody wants to evict a good tenant. That's just a reality of our industry. We're advising anytime a housing provider goes to evict a tenant that they at least consult a attorney ahead of time to make sure that they're doing everything correctly. It's awfully confusing, like I said earlier, that there are multiple moratoriums that people are dealing with. I've talked to housing providers that did not even realize that Oregon had its own moratorium. They were going off of what the federal moratorium was. And those housing providers did not belong to Oregon Rental Housing Association or other associations in the state. So really, I think the best thing we could do is to encourage any housing provider that you know that they belong to one of the associations, whether it's our association, Multifamily Northwest, or others, so they can be educated on the most current laws. We send out articles, we teach classes, we do everything we can do to make sure that landlords are doing everything correctly and not putting tenants on the street that should not be.
If I can chime in, I think
absolutely, Allison.
Thank you so much, Tim, for the work that you and CETA are doing. Places where tenants can call and ask someone questions and provide, you know, you all can provide information and assistance is really critical so that folks understand their rights and responsibilities. And I think also, you know, I really appreciate the work that Jason's organization is doing. And we know that everybody is doing their best to educate their members about what the current laws are. And we also know that that's still going to leave gaps, right, where both folks who rent their home and landlords will not always know what the current law is or may not be acting in good faith. And I think we certainly are hearing what you're hearing, Tim, that there is an increase in for cause notices. And you know, I certainly have been getting more questions through our social media in the last, I would say, 6 weeks about folks' rights and responsibilities and some tricky gray areas, right, about lease renewals. And, you know, I think I reflect a lot on how lucky I am to be able to own my home, right? The bank is never going to come and tell me that some people on this call know that I have a very loud cat. No one is ever going to tell me that I have to leave my home because my cat is too noisy and it's disturbing the neighbors, right? I have that privilege as a homeowner, and I have stability, not just in how much I pay, but I have complete control over my home. And that is something that so many of our neighbors in our communities don't share because they rent their home from someone else. I think we need to think thoughtfully about that power imbalance. And I know that for many, like being a landlord is a really serious responsibility, right? You are operating a business that provides someone else with the safety and stability of a place to call home. And so many of our landlord partners treat it that way. And we need to craft our laws to make sure that folks have protections against things that shouldn't be allowed, and making sure that we're investigating discriminatory actions, right? Or making sure that folks know their rights and responsibilities. And maybe we should ask the legislature for some additional resources to support and expand your work as well. Thank you.
I could just add one more thing if possible. Thank you for this question, Tim, because it is a very important question. As I said before, we know that there is an increase for cause evictions. One thing to look at the for cause evictions, yes, somebody may have a loud cat that is disturbing the neighbors, but it's also the duty of housing providers by Oregon law that we need to protect those neighbors that are being disturbed as well too. Sometimes an eviction is necessary to protect the neighbors that are, living peacefully, that rightfully should not have to, put up with whatever trouble the tenant being evicted is causing. And often for housing providers, that is a, gut-wrenching decision for many reasons that, one, they do not want to evict somebody. They do not want to see somebody have the chance of becoming homeless or having to leave their home, especially if they have children. And for two, they don't want to see the vacancy. They don't want the, added cost and frankly, and added risk of having a vacant unit when you evict somebody. So it's something that landlords really weigh the results or possible results before actually making that decision of doing the eviction, and they don't do it lightly.
The next question is coming from Karin Knutson, who is the co-coordinator for today's forum. So go ahead with your question.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much to our speakers today. My question is for Representative Fahey, but Jason and Allison, if you all have other thoughts about things that we could do, I'd be interested to hear your creative solutions as well. I was struck during the presentations by how many of the cascading harms that come from eviction are the same harms as we have identified through research like the United Way's ALICE report, which looks at this remarkable portion of our community that's living basically at the edge of the safety net or in the safety net, but just above poverty. The increased hunger, lack of appropriate medical care, instability, lower graduation rates, poor performance in schools, all of them connected to housing instability. And I'm curious if you all could talk a little bit about what longer term solutions you also think should be in the works. If we have the will as a state to find millions of dollars to support our community members in crisis due to COVID and this extraordinary circumstance of possible eviction, how can we find that same will to move ourselves out of this ongoing crisis that persists?
Thank you for the question, Karin. It's just spot on aligned with my thinking on this issue that, housing is the root cause of so many other things. Housing instability is the root cause of so many other things in our society right now, and challenges and struggles that Oregonians face. Healthcare, education stability for our kids, emergency services, all of these other things. And it's at the root of, Allison referred to the recent PSU study that came out that showed, Oregonians may owe as much as $400 million in back rent, but if those evictions are allowed to proceed, the cost to the state could be over $3 billion because of all of these sort of knock-on effects of, it's not just a family losing a home. And so it's one of the reasons why I just personally have been so drawn to housing policy in my time in the legislature, both because I know that my constituents specifically are struggling mightily to find affordable places to live, but also because it is such a root cause. And if we can sort of work upstream and try to prevent these housing affordability issues, how much how much less we would have to do in terms of crisis response. And so it's a great question. I sort of lament that over the last year, we have really been in crisis response mode around housing. We've been just, you know, from the service providers on up to the governor, we have been focused on how do we keep people housed right now. And so, you know, I'm just one person, Allison is just one person, Jason is just one person. And so when all of our efforts are focused on the immediate crisis, it takes some of the focus off of the long term. So I worry about that. And, you know, I alluded in my opening comments about housing supply and how, you know, we need to build more than 100,000 units in Oregon just to meet our current demand. And what we saw in the Great Recession was that in the housing crisis and the foreclosure crisis, we took our eye off the ball in terms of housing construction, and there was a great slowdown. And it's one of the reasons why we are where we are right now in terms of our shortage. So I really worry about that happening in this recession as well, that we're already so far behind and that there will be a slowdown in construction and a slowdown in our work on the policies that make housing more abundant. And so, you know, the work of the last year has been focused on the moratorium and the foreclosure moratorium and, you know, and on the getting the financial assistance out the door. Now that we are in session and we have the moratorium in place through the legislature's in our 2021 session, the moratorium's in place through the end of June, we do have a little bit more space to think long-term. And so there are a number of issues the legislature has taking up this session around homeownership. So, you know, there's a number of different proposals that would aim to close the racial homeownership gap between white Oregonians and Oregonians of color, making targeted investments to help with down payment assistance and technical assistance. There are, you know, we're hoping to stand up a long-term rental assistance program for a pilot for kids aging out of foster youth. There are a number of proposals related to housing supply, funding for the development of more affordable housing and policies around land use and accessory dwelling units and surplus public land, some of the very wonky technical stuff that really matters when it comes to increasing our supply. And a number of other things related to, you know, making sure there's shelters for our unhoused population and funding for navigation centers and all of those things. So I do feel like the session now is the time when I personally have finally gotten some space to breathe and focus more on the medium and long term instead of the crisis that's right in front of us.
Would Jason or Allison like to add any comments?
Thank you. Yeah, I would just like to kind of reiterate what Representative Fahey said. I think a lot of the issues that Oregon's facing right now is the housing supply. We don't have many housing choices. Rents are higher demand, and there's a great demand for rental housing right now. To make things even worse, there was a lot of housing lost due to the wildfires. There seems to be an extreme shortage in Oregon, and the only way we're going to get ourselves out of that is to incentivize more building of affordable rental properties and single family homes. The single family home rental is really in the most jeopardy right now. As I said, the ones that are going on the market being sold are being bought by owner occupied buyers, and they're taken off of the rental pool. Foreseeing people, families in you know, apartment complexes, which are good for apartment complexes owners, but you know, there may not be enough room for the family to you know, live the way that they want to live. I think it's important that we keep building more apartment complexes and we keep building you know, more single family homes. Right now, because of the pandemic, I know lenders are very skittish about lending money for new multifamily properties. And that's going to be an issue if we don't have a result to get this past due rent paid and go back to a fresh start and then have rental assistance programs in place and well-funded for any future emergency. So I'd like to say, I think I agree with Representative Fahey on all those. And I think our first priority should be we need to do something about adding more housing to Oregon.
Yeah, thank you. I would love to chime in. I think, and the Oregon Housing Alliance is some of the work that we do, right? Every year we get together, we sit around, well, this year it's been a lot of Zoom meetings, but normally we sit around a table and we debate good ideas until we come up with the right one to move forward. And we always probably have more ideas than we should, but there's a lot of work to do. And our ideas kind of span the continuum, right? Addressing homelessness, addressing the needs of folks who rent their homes, building more affordable housing and homeownership as well. And I think, you know, we tend to focus on building what we would call regulated affordable housing. So meaning we use public money to build the housing. There are rules about what income of people can live there and how long it must be affordable and how much the rents can be. And for building those types of affordable homes, the real constraint is the available public resources, right? And over the last, I would say, 5 years, the legislature has done an amazing job of dedicating more resources and freeing up more tools. And we have a long list of things that we're going to ask them to consider this year. I think really try to approach this legislative session with the idea that we both need to address COVID and wildfires, but we cannot stop moving forward, right? We have to continue the hard work to create more housing opportunity by addressing land use and funding and all the possible tweaks that we can consider that we should be focused on. So that's kind of a little bit of a frazzled approach to 2021, but really excited to see what we can accomplish this legislative session. And then I would also just say, like, I think the federal government is missing from this conversation, right? And really excited to see what the Biden administration might propose in the coming year, because we need federal investment, right? Right now in Oregon, one out of every four folks that is eligible for a Section 8 voucher or long-term rent assistance actually receives it, because that's how limited the budget is for that program. Any other type of safety net program, like food stamps, is something that folks, when they qualify by their income, they receive it. And housing is a lottery where you have to win the golden ticket to get help paying for your housing. And we really need the federal government to step up and fully fund our Housing Choice Voucher program and our long-term rent assistance work, so that folks, like Representative Fahey said in her opening remarks, so many Oregonians are paying way too much of their income towards rent, right? And the situation that folks get put in then is that if they lose their job, if their kid ends up in the emergency room, if their car needs an emergency repair, they are a few hundred dollars away from experiencing homelessness and trying to juggle all these things because there just isn't enough money left over. And rent assistance, like, that is always available to folks, or more available to folks even, would really help folks be less unstable in their housing. So thank you.
I would love to just quickly add on to that piece about the federal government, because, you know, I'm so focused on state and local things, but it's really been an adjustment to think about what if the federal government stepped in and did some of these really big ideas around, you know, financial assistance for more renters who are eligible for it, or treating housing infrastructure as infrastructure and as economic recovery. I would love to see the federal government really, you know, go big on housing construction and housing production as a way to both, you know, help the economy recover and infrastructure of our country. Infrastructure is not just roads and bridges. It's places where people can live. So I still to be determined what that's going to look like at the federal level, but I'm really excited about the possibilities.
The next question comes from Joel Corin.
I am Joel Corin. I've been a City Club member since 2012. Mr. Miller spoke about Senate Bill 330, which would provide tax credit for landlords for rent forgiveness. I'd like to know what, I assume he's in favor of it, and I'd like to know what the other speakers feel about that bill.
Well, I'll go first. Thank you for the question. So taking a bit of a step back, after the legislature met in June to extend the initial moratorium, I convened a work group of housing stakeholders with landlords and tenant groups and legislators and the agency heads and the service providers that are doing the work to talk about, okay, what is next? How can we, so, you know, what additional things need to be done to support both tenants and landlords? And we really considered a very wide range of options. We looked at what other states were doing, what other states were proposing as it relates to supporting the rental housing market, everything from, you know, canceling the rent to tax credits for landlords to mediation programs to help avoid evictions. We landed on the landlord compensation fund that I talked about earlier as the primary way to deliver financial assistance. And we did consider at the time California had proposed a tax credit approach for financing rent forgiveness. And we did consider that. There were a couple of challenges to that. One is that the tax credit would be taken over time. So at least in the California proposal, they had you wouldn't be eligible for the tax credit if you were a landlord that forgave rent for several years, and then it would pay over several years. And so, and there were many landlords that needed that cash right now, particularly the smaller landlords, to pay their mortgage and to keep afloat. So we really felt like more a cash-based approach with actual general fund allocation from the legislature was the better way to do it, rather than to have sort of a more delayed tax credit approach. The other challenges of the tax credit approach were that smaller landlords might be less able to take advantage of it, even if they could afford to wait. A tax credit is a much more complicated way to deliver assistance than sort of a grant-based program like the program that we landed at. And then there are other technical challenges around out-of-state landlords can't, you know, have an in-state Oregon tax credit and other things. So we seriously considered the full range of options, including a tax credit for landlords as a way of financing rent forgiveness, and landed on this landlord compensation fund as we thought what met the goals of what we were trying to do.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Sharon Reed.
Hello, and thank you to each of you for bringing such an informative session to us at City Club. I've been a City Club member for about 2.5 years. My question is, I'm curious that with the people, well, as renters, maybe choose to leave their rental unit, or I was very interested to hear Tim's update about some of the illegal evictions and such. If those people leave and if they join other family and friends, is there a bit of a cascading problem? Is there some sort of a guideline for the number of people that can inhabit a single family home or an apartment unit, like a two bedroom unit? Would they perhaps face coming into some difficulties because of opening their places to share, and then that becomes another problem with this housing shortage? I'm just curious if there's an occupancy number.
I'll start first. I know, and I don't want to speak for Allison, but I think they are, on the ground, we're seeing a little bit more of enforcement against folks who are doubling up during the pandemic. So if a landlord has a limit on the number of people that are allowed in the unit, that is now, you know, a cause for action if folks have doubled up. So I'll let her speak to that a little bit more, you know, more broadly and sort of a step back. I did bring forward a bill this session that we'll have a public hearing this week, hopefully, around cities' abilities to limit the number of unrelated people who can live together in a home. So it's already illegal at the federal level for local governments to limit the number of related people that can live together. You know, you can't limit someone's family size, for example. But many cities across Oregon do impose limits on the number of unrelated people that can live together. So for example, in Eugene, it would be illegal for 3 unmarried couples to live together in a home, regardless of how large the home is, even if it was a 5-bedroom or a 6-bedroom home. And so, you know, those, while I don't think that's gonna solve the housing crisis, removing those limits, I do think it will help us use our existing housing stock to more fully in the face of the housing shortage that we have. And it will allow for more housing options and more modern housing options. Modern people tend to live. The traditional definitions of families, you know, that's not from 30 or 40 years ago is not really what we follow today. So I do hope that that bill gets some traction in the legislature, but hasn't had a public hearing yet, so we'll see.
Unfortunately, we are now out of time. I know there are some additional questions that people would like to ask, and maybe there'll be an opportunity for some sort of follow-up. I'd again like to thank Representative Julie Fahey, Jason Miller, and Allison McIntosh for participating in today's forum. I think your presentations were very informative, and we are greatly appreciative. Thank you so much.
This has been our February 19th, 2021 program, Losing Health and Home, Oregon's Pending COVID-19 Eviction Crisis. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our Diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, our mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. LCC provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. I would also like to acknowledge our gold sponsors, Sacred Earth Botanicals, Emergency Veterinary Hospital, and Network Charter School. Before we thank our speakers today, I have a few more quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info and Simplified Computing LLC, and Dot Dotson's Photography. And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. If you are a City Club of Eugene member, you can ask a question at future taping of our programs. If you are not yet a member, you can join and then participate. More information is on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Next week, our program focuses on designer babies, prospects, and problems. Designer babies, once found only in science fiction, have become a reality with the advent of a technology called CRISPR, which allows scientists to modify our genes. Although CRISPR shows great promise for therapeutic use, it raises thorny ethical, legal, political, and societal concerns. Dr. Françoise Baylis, the author of Altered Inheritance and the 2020-2021 Wayne Morse Center Chair, will discuss the ethical questions presented by this new technology. More details and information about future programs can be found online at City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program. Representative Julie Fahey, Jason Miller, and Allison McIntosh, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us today. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.